Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Gnostic Media's Unspun, episode number 88. Thanks to everyone this last week who donated to the show, and thanks, George, for sending me a t-shirt, and other people for helping out and hooking me up with books and research and citations and all of that stuff. Of course, a lot of people got a lot out of Clint's last appearance on the show, and some of them, of course, were furious that Clint should be citing a fiction book to get knowledge out of it. But as is always the case, it's like in all of the studies that we do, you know, if we're exposing Aldous Huxley and his involvement with the CIA and MKUltra and everything, well, the guy was a fiction author. It kind of helps to read his Brave New World and stuff to understand the blueprint that they used for this whole plan for society that's been going on since the 1930s, this whole creation of Alpha, Beta, Delta, Epsilon, etc. So it's hard to get across to people that what we're discussing here is why you should read the Bible regardless of your beliefs, because if you live in this society, it's the rule book. It's like the rules to the Monopoly game that are on the back side of the lid, and maybe you should flip the lid over and read the instructions if you want to know how to play, or if you want to know the rules, or the Scrabble game, whatever. You know, there are the instructions right there on the back side of the lid. So we're just saying, look at the back side of the lid, and besides, we're not saying to follow necessarily the religion. There's a lot of good information in there just in general. And if you can't find anything of value in there for reading it, regardless of your religious beliefs or that you think it's fiction or, you know, whatever, all of these trolls that were throwing panic attacks and et cetera in the chat room last week, just kind of relax and take it in and, study things. Thanks, Derek, for the 10-pound donation, it says. I appreciate that. That must be from England since it's in pounds. Clint, welcome back to the show, good sir. Good to have you back.
I appreciate it. I'm glad we're doing this little series thing, if you will, because it is a difficult thing to break through. We're so conditioned to, either towards religion or towards just hating the Bible in general, and it's a brilliant, it's so brilliant that's how they did it. They put this thing as the foundation of law and then just did this so huge propaganda thing against it so that you end up hating the very thing that will literally take you outside of quote unquote the matrix or man's legal system. I got to say again, just so you understand, there's the noun version of everything. And then there's over here, there's the verb, thing. So religion is over here. It's in name only. Government over here, all the legal language over here. It's in name only. Everything has a noun, a person, place, or thing. It's stagnant. It's nothing over here in the fiction is real. It's just the name. Whereas over here, you're talking about the action. So when we say the word religion, you got to put it over here. It's just a word. I'm a Methodist, right? I'm a Catholic, therefore I'm going to heaven. Well, that's, what fallacy is that? I need a little help here. I'm Catholic, therefore I'm going to heaven. What the hell does that even mean, right? Whereas over here, you have the real meaning of being religious or acting religiously. Like, I religiously drink a cup of coffee every morning or three or four if I'm being bad. I religiously drink water because I know that it keeps me alive. It sustains me. I do a lot of things religiously. The problem is we've lost the law, the notion of following the law religiously, which means partaking nothing over here, nothing of the fiction, nothing of the artifice. Even going so far as technology to an extent, because when you look in the older dictionaries at these words, technology is defined as nothing more and nothing less than art. Technology is art. Art is what is artificial. So technology is not a bad thing unless it becomes more relevant or more important than the real. And what you find, I mean, you look at the main jobs out there. What are the main jobs? IT, bank teller, or bank, anything to do with money, anything to do with insurance, anything to do. We're basically built a whole economy now where we're all working to support this giant fictional monster based in nothingness.
Right.
Meanwhile,
it's not like tangible stuff like food and things that you actually need and use. And clothing
apart.
And actual necessities. It's things, it's literally fiction that they are working, buying, and selling from.
Right. And so then, over here you have reality, you have nature, and it's become almost a secondary thing to building up the fiction, building up the Matrix, building up, all these artificial things, technology and everything else. Meanwhile, we're ignoring the fact that we're like literally killing ourselves in the process, and it's a bizarre thing, but it is exactly what the Bible warns about. And I don't know how to say this any other way than all that means is that we're not following the law. We're following an alternate law, an artifice. We're in a fiction. We're in a construct that controls us because we believe it exists. We believe that it has power over us. We believe that we are the person. We believe that we are the flattering titles. We believe that those things are actually real. What does the Bible say? Take no flattering titles. Take no person. Respect no persons. Take no oaths. Take no... It keeps
Well, Clint, let's just hold on to that thought a second, and let's expand that out, because when you do go to someone and say, they show you their degree from the prestigious institution like Harvard that they went to, and you're not being nice if you, dismiss these things. We mentioned prestigious before. What is prestigious? It's, it's an illusion, a juggler, a fraud, a trickster, a hoax.
Yeah. I mean, it's something based on illusion or delusion.
Right? It's like pride, and you look it up and it's like all of these terrible things. Wow. And then you look up the word parade and it's like double wow, like a pride parade. Holy wow. And, people don't look up the definitions of these things, but this woman posted on my Facebook page a couple days ago the definition which I sent to you of nice, and it's not what most people believe is the definition of nice. So let's just I wanted to go into this because it's just understanding the words and what they really mean is so key, and understanding the law, getting back to what the core was. But smart is another one. It hurts, but this word nice, foolish, stupid, senseless, careless, clumsy, weak, poor, needy, simple, stupid, silly, foolish. That's what the word nice means. Jan Irvin, Clint Richardson, they're not nice.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thank you for the great compliment. But, and there was another one that we had come across a few weeks ago, like diversity was actually evil, and you had expanded on that even more. So what were the points that you had brought?
I did a show kind of based on these words where, you take this verse, right? And you have the universe. And interestingly enough, when you go to the concordances, you find that the word God is defined as basically the entirety of the universe, all of existence, right? It's a verb. Remember, God, Jehovah is a verb, and it means all of existence, all that is happening right now, all life and you know, call it creation, whatever, all of nature as it's going forward, right? All that was, all that is, and all that shall be is that note, that verb that is God, right? You don't have to take it any farther than that. You don't have to put a personification, or you don't have to think of it as a man, or right? That's only for storytelling. That's how you tell a story about that concept, that verb, is you turn it into a noun, a person, place, or thing, and you tell a story about it, right? So then you have what's called the adverse, right? Which would be, quote-unquote, Satan.
The adversary.
Right, adversarial. That is what Satan or the devil, an evil genius, basically, that's what it means, is to be against the universe, against nature, against reality. That's what adverse actually means. So you have the devil or Satan as the adversary, which is, what do they say, the king of lies, right? Again, metaphorically. Don't think of it as a pitchforked guy, you know, standing around hell, you know, harming people.
Are you saying it's not Krampus?
I'm saying that the leader...
Oh, I was hoping for Krampus. Christmas is coming and Halloween, sorry.
the legal system itself is referred to in their language as a debtor's hell. All right, hell is a word that means the prison underneath the executioner, right? So you're for debtors. We're all in a debtor's hell. It's an open-air prison, so we can walk amongst in freedom or franchise amongst the borders, right? The jurisdiction of the crown or the government. That's our freedom, right? And then you have diverse. Well, okay, that would be more like a polytheism as opposed to the monotheism of the universe, uni being one. You have diverse. And your definitions of diversity, why diversity is so dangerous. I tell you this, and this was, again, why the Bible starts to make so much sense. It's like, no. Diversity is a no-no. It tells you to leave the cities. It tells you to leave the nations. It tells you to go off back into nature and follow the law. It doesn't say be diverse in all nations. It doesn't say allow people with a different quote-unquote religion or law or holy book, sacred book, to come in and you know, it doesn't say live next door to people that aren't like-minded and aren't of the same law. It's very exclusive. That's why I actually really like the Bibles, because it's not this ridiculousness of that Jews and Christians can live together, when the very definition of Jew in the Bible is that which is opposed to Christ, or i.e. the new law, the New Testament. So
i.e. the adversary again.
Yeah, there you go, adversary. How can the adversary live with the one who tries to follow the law? If you're adversarial to our system of law, which we've all become, unfortunately, I mean, technically we've all become Jews, because Jew is not it's not a religion, it's not a race, it's a word that means against Christ, which really means against the natural law. That's, and again, that means we're taking the name, we're taking the number, we're using the person, we're doing all the things in fiction. That is what it really stands. It's Yahudi and Iudios, if I'm saying that correctly in the Latin. Those are the two words that Jew are is translated as, and it's not, there's nothing good about it. There's nothing, it's strictly a word that means against the Christian or Christ law. I don't like to say the word religion, but you know, that is what they call it. So, but again, it's the notion, when the government talks about God and says, you know, an act of God and all that, remember, it's not talking about religion, it's talking about the Bible, it's talking about the religionless law, basically, and then everything else is another duck. So, you know, it gets, after a while, you know, the first show we did, you know, we defined the word God, and if you missed that, then it's going to be very difficult. And remember, you know, God is as translated, They put the word God in many, many different places to mean many different things. Most of the time when the word God is used in the Bible, it's referring to men acting as kings, lords, landlords.
Exactly. You know,
very, very seldom is Jehovah or the one true universe, you know, the verb that is all of being another verb, right? Not a being, but the act of being. They two different concepts. Most of the time that word God is used to mean men. And so you have all these people saying, well, God was such a bastard in the Bible. God killed and God beheaded and he killed the children and he did. No, those were men. But because the king of England is also called the Vicar of God, i.e. literally God's representative on earth, just like the Pope, of course he's going to call the Davidic kings as God. He's not going to differentiate between Archon and Jehovah and the gods Elohim and God-like. He's just going to say all those things as one word, God. And we, being literalists, not understanding the translation, not doing our due diligence and looking, we have been conditioned to say, well, you know, I can't be part of a God that doesn't love, or I can't, you know, all those stupid freaking debate tactics that they use to take us away from the knowledge that's put forth from the Bible. We're literally conditioned to stay away, right? So back to these funny words, you know, give you an example. We use the word dwell, for instance, right? A dweller. Well, the verb dwell, right, it's an action. It means to mislead, to deceive, to make a fool of, to lead astray, to go or lead astray, to sleep, to stun, make giddy or perplex, to hinder, to delay, to put someone in a trance or a stupor, you know, on and on, error, heresy, madness, you know, to be a dweller, right? And of course, it also means a place of residence. But if you're dwelling in the legal fiction, in other words, the United States as its citizen, then you're being dwelt. you're literally being made a fool of. You're being led astray. You're off your course. You're in pursuit of Mammon, the god of Mammon, instead of the god of nature. You can't have two gods. That only means you can't have two laws. Right? Money is against the law in nature, because money doesn't exist. Nothing in reality has a price, otherwise it becomes slavery. But if you have a price, then you're a slave, right? You're something that's owned by somebody. Right? So these words that we use on a constant basis, we call our home a dwelling, for God's sake. Do you know what that means? You don't. To dwell in a house, right? Yeah, I'm sorry, but it means bondage. It means the condition of a serf or a slave, a tenant farmer, a householder, a freeborn farmer in other countries. But bondage means to dwell, right? I mean, you start connecting all these terms, and you find out that we are speaking English, but slang, a modern form of these English words that are taken from all the, you know, all the Roman, all the, Latin, you know, Greek, the Chaldean, all these different languages that meant something completely different. And we are speaking as if we know what we're talking about when we're saying these words. But you got to remember that to the legal ear, to the judge in the courtroom, to the politician, to the legal, what we call the devil, the evil genius, right? They're hearing the real, their own, what we call terms of art. Because remember, these words are, no word is a create. You could say it, that words are not an act of God, or they're not a creation of God. They're a creation of man. And therefore, man defines his own terms, especially when it comes to whichever art form. So religion is an art. Law is an art. Legal law. Being a doctor, medical is an art, and they all have different meanings for the same word. And so when we're speaking to the judge and we say, well, yeah, I have a dwelling over here, you've just told him that you're a that you're property, basically, that you exist to serve that judge, and you accept his administration over your person. And so all these words are so dangerous, and yet we speak them with such utter arrogance and confidence, especially when we're putting down the Bible, and we have no idea what we're saying when we do it, using words that we haven't looked up, for instance.
Clint, you're not being nice.
It's true. It's true. I don't get accused of being nice anymore. I'll be honest.
But now you get that's a compliment, because when you look up the word nice, it's exactly the opposite of what people think it means. So that's actually a really good thing. What do you have to say to people who claim, and we already addressed this last week, but we might as well hit a little bit, who claim Christianity is a trick, by the Jews to enslave us, Well, let me let you answer that, and then I'll toss in something.
Well, the word, again, let's look at which came first, right?
This is exactly where I was going to go.
Yeah,
so,
if the definition in the Bible of a Jew, i.e., Ayudios and Yahudi, it has nothing to do with an Israelite. An Israelite was someone who was following God's law, and if you fell from that, then you were a Jew. It wasn't like Israelites were Jews. That's a common misconception. The chosen people. If you go look up the word chose, it actually means something completely different. To be chosen or to be in a chose or a chose at law, right? Go look up these terms and you're like, holy crap, that means something completely different. Maybe I can pull it up here real quick. It's in my other document, but, It's like a person.
Oh my goodness. All right, so chose, noun, a thing, chattel, piece of property.
Yes. Chosen people. Right? It means something different because it's a legal term. It's a metaphoric term and it's not a good thing. In law, chose, in a chose as a noun. Is property in action, a right to possess
now,
or that which may be demanded and recovered in a suit of law. Right?
What Clint is getting at is if something is the adversary, first you have to have the verse or the word, the logos first, and then you have to have the adversary of that. You can't have the adversary, you can't have the thesis before the antithesis. The thesis comes first, and then the antithesis comes after the thesis. Thesis, antithesis.
And the Jew is the antithesis.
Right. So, and this is now, let me explain something, and I think it's the images on my phone, unfortunately. I'd be like, so there's this book called The Khazari. And, you can look up any of them. But so the book is bound on the right hand. Now, all Christian books are bound on the left hand, binding the left hand, which would be like the criminal hand, the criminal path, the lying path, bounding the lie. So in the Jewish book, the right hand is bound, and so you're actually reading, you turn the book over and you're reading from the back to the front. And if you put this in context to the Bible, this again puts the New Testament before the Old Testament. It puts natural law before man's law. But, you know, and if you say natural law, you know, God's law would be, what do you mean by that? I'm going to freak out and I'm going to, you know, the Bible's fiction, Clanton. I got to thumb down this episode because they're talking about the Bible and I'm going to freak out because I haven't ever read it. And oh my God, how could they say that?
Before you go on, though, there is one thing that's wrong with that assessment. And that is the notion of time. Now, you got to understand that the Bible is not a history. And more importantly than that, it's a timeless document. Who knows how old it actually is? There's no original Bible, right? So we call it a simulacra, which means a copy without an original, which I will get into. But the notion that the Bible has an original is of course, fallacious. Even the Greek versions were found in a monastery in like the 1700s, right? So there is no original Bible. And so if you consider it as timeless wisdom or timeless knowledge, it's not something that you say, well, that happened then and that happened then, therefore this, right? So when you say that the New Testament or the Old Testament was either before or after, that would be an incorrect assessment. It's more that one cannot exist without the other. There is no point in a new law unless there is an old law. There is no point in fulfillment of the law, which is what they call the New Testament, without something to fulfill. It's timeless, right? So to consider it at either one as a history, I think, is a mistake, and it goes back to the Romanized versions of religion and calendric type of thinking on a timeline, when in fact, remember, what we're talking about is all that was, all that is, and all that shall be. The laws of nature are not something that were created in history, right? Some professor did not say the laws of nature, you know, exist. They're self-evident. So when a man writes...
You mean it's not like when the liberals think that doctors assign their gender at birth?
Right. Hey, I want to remind people, Ron Paul signed 20,000 birth, or however many he said he birthed. He is the witness for all those birth certificates. I want people to think about that for a minute. And he's the one creating the digital identity, the fiction. So he's the witness. He's not such a good guy after all, right? So, yeah, so think of it more as again, you cannot know anything without knowing its opposite, right? It is worthless, useless to have the Bible unless so
it's yin and yang, basically, interwoven, tied together.
Right, nothing can be understood without its opposite. So knowing the Bible, worthless. Knowing the legal language, worthless. Putting them together, suddenly it's a puzzle that just fits, because you see that this is diametrically opposed in every single way to this, and when you put them together, then every point matches up, right? In order to be in this, you have to go against this. You have to accept personhood or status. You have to accept titles. You have to accept money or the value of mammon, valuation, right? You have to accept everything that this is against. So what use is it to know this when you have nothing to compare it to, right? So to say one comes before or after the other, you could say that this might be wiped out because of this, right? This sort of warning or timeless a knowledge that doesn't allow you to fall into the legal system or the matrix, as you might call it, right? So, again, take the concept of time, the concept of price, because it's priceless, right? You can't put a value on such knowledge. No prices in nature, right? That's again a man-made construct. So you're taking everything man-made and you're putting it over here, and you're taking everything else, which therefore must be of, i.e., of God or nature, right? Creation, whatever word you wanna use. And man goes over here too, but the creations of man go over here. And these things are artificial. They cannot exist in nature. They're puppets. They need a puppet master, which is man. Right? Technology and everything else must be operated by man, although we're entering into the age of artificial intelligence, where it's going to start controlling us, which is very, very, that's where the concept of the Matrix starts coming into play. Out of control.
Yay.
Well, so, that's kind of, you know, I'm going to do a series of shows on my own show about the origin of the Matrix, the movie. And it's such a disappointment to find out, you know, so many people are enthralled by it, and it's because it still has a mystery to them. But when you find out that it's plagiarized in every possible way, that there's nothing original to it, it's just every other science fiction movie put into a big hash, but it's specifically taken from these three books, right? Even how do you say his name? Keanu Reeves, he did an interview, and he said, you know, before I could even read the script of the movie, they had me read three books, which, of course, is what the movie is based on, or plagiarized from, literally plagiarized from. And those books, those three books, my favorite book in the world, which I have right here, in fact, you can see that, okay. This guy's unfortunately dead, but he wrote some incredible, incredible stuff that I plan on getting the whole collection. French guy, Baudrillard, Simulacra and Simulation. Again, a simulation, kind of understand, but a simulacra is a copy without an original, which essentially is what we're building to the point where nature is no longer even something we understand, right? We're so into the fiction, and so you build this fictional city based on history, which we know is always false, and you have a simulacra of what used to be, but actually was never in existence, right? So a copy without an original. The Bible is a copy without an original. Lots of things are a copy without original. A statue, an idol, is a copy without an original, right? You got a statue of Jesus. Who took a fucking Polaroid of Jesus that you could make a statue out of in fucking Rome, right? It just, you know, these are copies without an original. And it's a beautiful concept, but the whole movie, the whole thing, I swear, is copied from this one book, which I recommend everybody get. It's one of the most difficult reads I've ever had to go through, and I've read it about five times now. And I'm going to do a series of shows, plus my second book is all about how this movie is such a blatant, ridiculous plagiarization. Not only that, but adverse to what these books actually are trying to get across, this one especially. The second book is a book called Out of Control, which was written by the guy who owns Wired magazine. And it's about systems. For instance, the cover shows a beehive, right? A beehive is a system. Out of Control literally means that when you read this, it's really frightening, but the concept of Out of Control is that they plan, they know that eventually their creation, their artificial intelligence will become out of control. And we're already seeing that in many aspects of, you know, where the artificial intelligence is creating more possibilities than there are actual things in existence, right? More possibilities of things than there are actually things that we know of, right? These types of deep thought that are going on in the artificial intelligence, Facebook, I think. They created an artificial intelligence system. They had to turn it off because when they turned it on, it said English is not a good enough language. We need to create our own language. And it starts creating a language and talking to each other, and they turned it off because they were afraid what it would talk about behind their backs. All right, this is the whole concept of Out of Control is that eventually technology will be out of our control. It will think for itself, and something like the Matrix portrayal of the movie might actually happen, right? Certainly, something like Skynet might very well happen, where we are enemy number one. You know, nature is enemy number one of the artifice. That's what the Bible talks about.
There was a professor down at UC Irvine who wrote a bunch of science fiction novels talking about you know, this these computer systems taking over and enslaving us, and the humans live in little citadels and little groups, and the machines go around and kill us all and use us as batteries and for spare parts and stuff like that for their for their systems, you know.
Well, imagine what's going to happen. They made a movie out of this. It was called Repo Men, I think, and where these repossession guys, you know, you go repossess a car because you don't pay your mortgage. Well, imagine in the future when you have a heart transplant, and the heart transplant has, you know, it's by Microsoft, right? You don't pay Microsoft your bill to have your heart. They come and they remove it right out of your chest because you're basically living on borrowed time. As long as you pay Microsoft for your artificial heart or whatever it is that you need as a transhuman to exist, well, then you're fine, but they'll just kill you to take their parts back, give it to someone who will pay, right? Very scary kind of concept. Not only the concept, but the fact that people are desperate enough to take such a job as a repo man, right? Repossessing old ladies' lungs and stuff when they can't pay anymore. You know.
Well, how about the people would create their own demise in the first place, you know?
Well, and again, you know, this is it's a battle between, I mean, I'll say it again and again, how many countless science fiction movies are about, even Brave New World, and, you know, is about this battle between technology or artificial intelligence, or just specifically intelligence as opposed to reality and nature, and the higher law, the higher knowledge, right? And it's important to differentiate between information, right? Something that's in form but no substance, and knowledge, which is something that you can't have unless you really truly experience what, you know, whether that, and this brings in the trivium, of course. You take the information or the grammar, first thing you have to do is decide whether it's real or Memorex, right? Is it real? Is it self-evident? Or is it false information? And then you have to apply all of your testing, you know? So information is what the Matrix is built on. There's no knowledge of anything real in the Matrix. It's a simulation, a simulated simulacrum, a copy without an original of what the computer thought history was. I mean, it took all of the history, imagine taking the internet today and building a perfect human society based on freaking YouTube, right? I mean, or Facebook, right? Building a human society based on the history that is YouTube and Facebook. Can you imagine what a horrific place that would be? Right? So that's the perfect society.
Well, and include InQtel's Google searches as well, you know.
Oh, of course. Imagine, though, you know, imagine the artificial intelligence when it scans the entire structure of our collective information. Not knowledge, but information. All the fake news, all the everything that is not real, all the, you know, just all this stuff that occupies our time.
The lies and deception and everything.
I mean, what would you think of the human race but must destroy, right? I mean, this thing that we've become must be destroyed. It is like a virus, just like the movie portrays. The other book is a book called Evolutionary Psychology, which I actually haven't gotten a hold of. But those are the three books that the movie is actually just a blatant plagiarization of. Concepts like the desert of the real, you know, the Matrix, it's all comes from this particular book, which is Simulacra and Simulation. If you get no other book in your life, I swear this will open your eyes in ways that I can't even explain. It's really, like I said, it's really hard to read, but you'll see where they're getting all of their ideas and all of their quotes and stuff. Give me an example. He opens up the book with a concept. I can't remember what it's called, but it's the comparison of the map to the actual land or the actual city, right? And the map is pristine, right? You go to the city planning office, for instance, you look at the plans for the city, you've got the new mall here, strip mall here, new church, new this, new that, right? And it looks beautiful on the map. And they always keep the maps looking just stunningly, you know, perfect. Meanwhile, that which the map represents is falling to shit because we respect the map, the fiction, the thing without substance, the information that the map is, over the reality it represents. And you can use that model on just about everything, which explains why basically our health is deteriorating, our landscape is deteriorating, everything, our water is deteriorating, our oxygen is deteriorating. I mean, everything is just pretty much going to shit because we are, again, conditioned and brought into this artificial matrix, if you will, of the legal code. What is the Matrix, man? The Matrix, as far as the movie, it is nothing more and nothing less than the legal system. That's all it is. It's a metaphor to explain the legal system, right? You're in a pod, essentially, right? The word matrix or matris, right, comes from the mother or the womb. Matriculation is the act of registering a name and admitting it to membership, right? How do we enter into this legal matrix? We get a birth certificate. To matriculate is to roll or register from the word matrix, to enter or admit to membership in a body or society by enrolling the name in a register. Again, in our first show, I think we talked about Caesar. Caesar said, all men must be taxed, which means registered. You can't tax anything unless you register it first. The Pope, says all men must be brought under the Pope. Well, that means register all men. Give them a name on top of their Christian name, their first name, the surname, and register it through the birth certificate, right? Mama, let's see. Where's my matrix definitions here? I got to go through my little document. So matrix from mother or mater from the Latin matrix. The womb, the cavity in which the fetus of an animal is formed and nourished till its birth. Well, what are they all doing in those pods? You know, they're literally in an artificial womb waiting to be birthed. What happened when he got disconnected? He was reborn into nature. You see the parallels here, right? It's a really evil sort of way of simulating the Christian rebirth back into nature, back into the natural law, right? So you have no more thrills, you have no more things that all taste like chicken. You have no more clothes and no more. You're just back into the sort of boringness of nature, even though it's beautiful. So the womb, that's what the matrix means. A mold, the cavity in which anything is formed and which gives it shape as the matrix of a type or i.e. a status. A person, in other words, a status. The place where anything is formed or produced, as in the matrix of metals. You put a gold coin in a mold and you create a coin. In the civil law, the matrix is the... the protocol or first draft of a legal instrument from which all copies must be taken. That is your birth certificate. The protocol or first draft of a legal instrument, when you go to get a driver's license, for instance, you know, they ask for a copy of your what? Your birth certificate, right? Your matrix. What formed you into this person or status that allows you to get a driver's license? Well, it's your matrix, your artificial womb. Matrix is a womb. It goes on and on and on and on. So you're talking about a legal entity that is created from the vital statistics of the informer, which is the mother, the doctor is the witness. And let me read you what the president of Estonia just said. In this was the Estonian president, Kersti Kaljulaid. She was speaking at the Tallinn Digital Summit, European Union conference, and this is just September 29th, 2017. Remember that the whole world must be registered. The way they're doing that is to give everybody a person, a status, through digital ID. That's why you see all these refugees, for instance. The only way they can get status or benefits in the countries where they flee to is to register themselves. 1.6 billion people are not registered yet. We have to register everyone to complete the matrix, right? Metaphorically. Digital ID, she says, is part of every regular ID card in Estonia already for us, 16 years. You know, digital identity is automatically created at the birth. She has an accent. A doctor invests or inputs the details of the birth into the system, and without the doctor herself even recognizing this in the background, the system itself is creating a digital identity for a baby. Parents later add the name without going to any office, and the digital citizen is born. And this is the president of Estonia telling you basically that you're all being born into the freaking AI, into the matrix, that the digital aspect of the birth process, the birth certificate, is now being computerized into an artificial. It's doing it itself, practically, right? This is very, very, very biblical. I don't know how to tell you that. This is what the Bible has warned against. You want to know what the quote-unquote antichrist system is? Don't take it literally that it's a man. Take it as what it is, this artificial intelligence, right? What is the word antichrist would mean a replacement for nature, the laws of nature, a replacement for reality. So what is that? Artificial intelligence. Intelligence without knowledge. Empty, blank intelligence without any actual roots into nature. That's what a computer is, right? Just this cold, heartless, substanceless intelligence that has no idea what the quote-unquote human condition is all about. No idea what nature needs in any kind of realistic way. That's what we're all being put into, is this quote-unquote beast system that literally, again, the beast is not the beast. It's that when we are put into this system, we are considered as livestock or beasts of burden. They literally nickname us dogs. They nickname English language as dog Latin, because when they call you a dog, it's a reference to being on all four feet, or your hands and your feet. To be four-footed, when you look up that term in the legal law, to be four-footed means you're a slave or a beast of burden. So it's not that the beast is coming, you know, some religious art that went around. No, it's that we are becoming beasts. And this is the correct interpretation, as you read it in the Bible, if you're willing to do the due diligence and understand what it's trying to tell you. So what I'm trying to say is nothing more than the Bible is saying, which is we're in an ancient, ancient battle that will never end. And that is a battle between reality and fiction. Reality and artifice. What is artificial, or what do we say? Adverse, adversarial to nature. What is, that means something that's not real, right? Because nature can never be adversarial to itself. The spider that traps the fly is not adversarial to the fly. It needs the fly to live. That's part of nature. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about something that's deliberately against the law, that deliberately has a false existence that directly impacts the reality of God, or i.e. our existence as oneness, as one, if you will, organism, one being, which, you know, again, that's the definition of the verb that is being or God. I could do this all day.
All right. Where do you want to go next here?
Huh, I don't know, man. We're at a point, like I said, where we're already kind of familiar with the legal system. Now we're getting familiar with what is the, and you know, the thesis and the antithesis, right? The legal system is the antithesis to the Bible or the natural law. So, I mean, whatever we do going forward, you have to speak of both of these systems in order to understand what's happening. You cannot look at the law of man without looking at what that law of man is opposed to, right? So you start asking questions, like reasonable questions that really don't make any sense in until you understand, why do I need a license to get married? Why would I need a license to get married, right? Now, in nature, you don't. You make a promise to your man or your woman, and that promise is not a promise to each other, it's actually a promise to God, to the universe, to being itself, that you will become one with the oneness of nature, follow the law, and be good parents and all that stuff, right? The natural law.
So let me ask you, I'm going to change the subject here because somebody keeps going on and on about it in the chat box. But we don't have a leg to stand on or whatever because we're not converting every word in this discussion into gematria numbers. And because every word can be converted into a number and we're not discussing those patterns, this person should have every post in the chat box about that rather than focusing at all on what we are discussing.
Well, this can be answered. I mean, I understand that line of thinking. Again, we look for anything we can possibly find to avoid facing reality, right? We hide in these artificial wombs. That's directly out of Silent Weapons for Quiet Wars, right? You create these artificial wombs, these hiding places, so that you don't have to be responsible. You don't have to, you know. So let's take sacred geometry, right, which is very close to what this guy is talking about. What is the Bible? What does the word sacred actually come from? You see, every word has.
Isn't it secret?
No. Well, no. Sacred, when you hold something real or self-evident, i.e. of God, as sacred, then it means exactly that. It's sacred. It's something to worship. But what happens when you hold geometry, a creation of man, right, as sacred? Well, then the word sacred becomes cursed. When you hold something artificial or something that is form without substance, something not of nature, And what is geometry but a bunch of numbers that describe empty space, basically. It's handy. I'm not saying anything against it. I'm saying that when you worship the number that is a creation of man, a language, essentially, what is the matrix but a bunch of numbers, a bunch of letters, a bunch of words, a code, right? When you worship the code that's a creation of man over that which it represents in reality, then the word sacred gets turned into the word cursed. So when we hold geometry as sacred over the reality it represents, then we're committing we're blaspheming nature or God, if you will. We're blaspheming the very laws of nature, which don't respect fiction, basically. Now, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that geometry and math and all these things don't have their place. I'm saying that the law is to never take those things as more important or give them a value in mammon that causes them to be damaging to that which they represent, which is nature, reality.
And, you know, and here's the thing, as I was trying to tell this person to stop, you know, distracting the whole chat box and the show, and they couldn't understand that what they were doing was a distraction and irrelevant to the discussion. And, you know, creating this very thing that you're exactly talking about right now.
Well, and here's what gets me. Like, I'm actually a huge critic of frickin' 1 through 10, like the mathematics and the number system, right? When you create a system that is designed to be perfect, and then you come up with the answer, because how can you not, if it's designed to be perfect and come up with the answer every time, why are you impressed with yourself? Why are you impressed that there is a system of numbers between 1 and 10, and no matter what you do, you come up with the answer, right? It might be a digital point that goes out to here. It's a system designed to come up with a perfect
right answer. But, you know, let me, you know, you had mentioned, or one of us had mentioned the word knowledge, and then he says, oh, well, Freemasonry is also this same number represented by 42. So knowledge is therefore somehow Freemasonry or some irrelevant bridge between these. It's irrelevant. You know, just because there's a number, you know, and both of them in gematria come up with 42 doesn't mean, you know.
Let's apply it to reality, okay? I have an equation here that is a geometrical representation of the distance between here and Jupiter. That's information. That's pure speculative mathematical information. It has no knowledge whatsoever. I've not actually traveled that distance and experienced what it is. I can call what's in space dark matter all I want to, but I don't have any knowledge of dark matter. I don't have any actual experience of it. So it's all information. That's the difference between, again, what is cursed and what is sacred. What should be held as sacred, which is the reality, nature, right? What is self-evident and self-existent, not what is man-made. Don't confuse what I'm saying with religion. This is purely the scientific law that we're talking about. You can't even look at it as religion. You can't look at the Bible really even as religion once you understand that it's law and that it's very logical, very reasonable, and at the same time written in poetic verse, just like every other fairy tale, fable, and every other story told by the ancients to pass and relay knowledge. This is very important. You know, I sent you those videos that were Bill Cooper was reading from. Bill Cooper, rest in peace, was reading from a source. I don't know what the source was, but it was a Masonic source. And it was talking about this very problem. He said, little could the ancient mythologists and sages have foreseen that the fabulous narrations which their genius devised to cloak high truth would end by plaguing the mind of the Western world with 16 centuries of unconscionable stultification. He's saying you're taking it literally when you should be taking it metaphorically. You know, it's mythology, but mythology has a purpose. It is to pass on knowledge. The story of Narcissus, for instance, is to pass on knowledge. He says they could not possibly imagine that their allegorical constructions to dramatize spiritual truth would so miscarry from their hidden intent as to cast the mental life of half the world for ages under the cloud of the most grotesque superstition known to history, which, of course, he's talking about religion. He's saying that the Bible has been so misconstrued, so taken so out of context that you have this grotesque, I love the way he puts it, whoever wrote this, grotesque superstition known to history. Nor could they have dreamed that the gross blindness and obtuseness of later epochs would cite these same marvelously ingenious portrayals as the evidence of childish crudity on the part of their formulators. And what he's basically saying in this sort of speech is that, you know, we've either been trained to think the people in religion say the Bible is the word of God, it cannot be denied, it is this and it cannot be anything else, and then you have all these people that are bothering you with their comments who again say it's childish, it's myth, it's obviously done by people way back when in caveman, you know, clothes.
To enslave us and yada yada. Right. And therefore it's irrelevant to today.
What he's saying is, hey, let's bring those two together. And let's say that what these men were actually doing when they wrote the Bible was telling the self-evident truth of things, the self-evident law. That which cannot be denied unless you're a nihilist, right? Someone who doesn't believe existence exists, right? So you've got to come from one of these two sides, Republican and Democrat, left and right. You've got to bring it down on both sides. You've got to meet in the middle, and you're going to say, okay, these were men, as he says, that were considered to be reborn in the mind, as Hermes said, insofar as the human intellectual faculty is capable of it, an understanding of the mystery and riddle of life itself and the laws of its evolutionary unfolding was achieved by men who had been reborn in mind. They were enlightened men possessed with true knowledge, which we would call, in the old language, we would call divinity. That doesn't mean God, quote-unquote, wrote the Bible. It means men who had divine knowledge. What does that mean? It just means the self-evident truth. It doesn't have to go any farther than that.
Right.
That's the litmus test for the Bible. That's why I keep telling people, if you just read the thing, you're going to find that you're coming against truths that you cannot deny.
Well, you know, so let's just give a quick example here. This one's super easy. You know, it's and I posted this to someone earlier this morning who jumped all over my shit for posting that definition of nice. And he's like, you're an arrogant ass and blah, 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 blah. And, you know, and I'm just like, now what kind of arrogant ass would write a comment like that on the board, you know? But, you know, so like Matthew 7:5, this is just self-evident knowledge. You hypocrite. First, cast out the beam out of thine own eye, and then shall you see clearly to cast the mote out of thy brother's eye. In other words, fix your own stuff. Make sure your own stuff is fixed. Look at yourself before you try to judge others. Make sure that, you know, whatever you're going to judge me for, you're not in the process of doing. It's like, you know, Tim Leary's son, Zach, last week posted this atrocious comment about me on this guy's page. And he's like, everything, you know, he's like, Jon Ervin is an asshole and a hypocrite, and all he does is spew toxic sludge and misinformation out of his mouth. And I'm just reading this whole quote, and I just took it and quoted it, and it's like, hypocrite, anyone? You know?
Well, and
yeah, and this is, you know, and it's like, you know, I get Zach Leary is upset because I exposed his whole debt, you know, his daddy's whole MKUltra program and cry sobs and all of that, you know, but I mean, you know, what hypocrisy, right?
You messed with his inheritance, man.
You know, it's like his, you know, yeah, you know, extending all the way back to Aleister Crowley. Oh.
Yeah, well, so the entire purpose, by the way, behind the birth certificate is something called attainder, which, you know, if you look up these terms in the legal system, it's corruption of blood. Now, again, everything legal is, you know, nobody should believe that anything in the legal system is real or actually causes a true corruption of your blood. Your blood doesn't turn black or, you know, get tainted. It's fictional. It's a way of altering the way the law itself sees you. So there are two things that the law recognizes, right? For instance, the word son it recognizes as a term of nature, whereas the word heir it recognizes as a term of law. And these are two different realms, the law realm of man and the natural realm of, quote-unquote, an act of God, right? It's creation, procreation. So you got to realize that when these elites, when the private people out there pass on their estates, their lands, because they're landholders, they are not making or signing a will. Because the law automatically recognizes sanguinity or bloodline. It automatically knows and recognizes that your estate will be passed on to your son. Used to be not the daughter, but nowadays they've changed that, right? That's the law. That's the foundation of the law because because nature is always highest, right? Well, what they've done to us is they've got us into this birth certificate system, which literally creates a digital person, a digital status, an entity that is not ourselves, but that we act as. Well, obviously, no blood flows through a fiction, right? Bugs Bunny doesn't have blood, and he doesn't fucking eat carrots. Those carrots are not real. So the idea is corruption of blood. If I go and now all of a sudden as a parent, because I've given up my paternal rights, I've literally released, delivered, abandoned my child to the state, and it has given back to me as a guardian. So my child has become a ward of the state, all because of that person, that status that's created from the birth certificate. And then I send my child to school. I have him get a bank account. I do all these things that start confirming that my child is that artificial construct in the matrix, right? Because all these benefits, my education, my public benefits, my consumer protections, my Social Security, my money, my bank account, everything is in the fiction. And in order to access it, I have to be a person of the fiction, a cartoon character, a puppet. And as the puppet master, I have to go and I have to literally walk around, kind of like the car on the Monopoly board, right? The avatar. I have to act as that person. And that means that I have to obey all the laws of that person, which is the entire code, right? The law of the matrix. Words, numbers, codes, going down the screen. That's all it is. It's fake. It's not real. So now all of a sudden the law is no longer recognizing the blood because I'm not acting as an act of God. I'm acting as an act of the state or the district. So the whole purpose of the birth certificate process, while we, all the public entity and all the public in all of the world now is being put into these digital identities, right? Everybody in the world is getting Social Security. If you don't know this, you better check it out. There's something called the International Social Security Administration, I believe it is, ISSA. and it's in 140 or 150 countries at this point. Everybody in the world has Social Security. China has the same freaking, same exact communist socialist system that we do. It's called Chinese Social Security, right? It's no different. We're all under the same system because we're all going to this global citizenship thing. And when, and this is in my book, actually, when you see these quotes coming out of the United Nations, now, United Nations, again, if you go to the Bible and you read about the fourth beast, the beast that comes from all nations, essentially, you know, United Nations, obviously. So when I type in my 2030 Agenda 2030, it used to be Agenda 21, right? Well, now it's Agenda 2030, the newest form of Agenda 21. By 2030, the World Bank in September 2015, in collaboration with Accenture, the World Bank is calling on governments to work together to implement standardized, cost-effective identity management solutions. In other words, enslavement of all people into fictional, a corruption of blood of all people so that no one has inheritance. No one can pass anything to their children. Everything belongs to the state because everything belongs to the person, not the man acting in person. This is why everyone needs a will, because the law no longer recognizes the will of the man, only the administration of the person. But when the person dies, there is no blood connection. The entire estate goes into probate unless you have a trust, etc., etc. You need a will because the law doesn't recognize the blood. The whole purpose of the birth certificate process was to corrupt the blood of every man on earth that is not part of their, you know, their land-holding feudal system that's been there since the beginning. So they want to get everybody into this identification. Under the birth certificate process is the most important part because that creates the legal entity. They say that, just like the Bible warns you, that you won't be able to buy, sell, or trade without the quote-unquote mark, right? It says, a report synopsis notes that about 1.8 billion adults around the world currently lack any kind of official documentation. That can exclude those individuals from access to essential services and can also cause serious difficulties with transporter identification. Right? We want to ensure that refugees can have access to services. That's why we're going in and fucking blowing up all the infrastructure in countries, sending in fake terrorists, driving people out so that they have to register themselves in other countries, taking that number down to where everybody in the world is a refugee. You don't know it, but you're a refugee in America. You're a foreigner in whatever state you live in because you're a United States citizen. And the United States, Washington, D.C., is a foreign entity from every other state and every other nation, right? California is foreign to Utah. United States is foreign to every other one of the 50 states. We are foreigners living in the states. This is why we have no rights. We have no access to the Constitution. We've been completely 100% lied to and tricked. We've been dwelt. We're in dwellings. We're dwelling in the United States, right? It offers hope for the UN's sustainable development goal of getting legal ID into the hands of everyone in the world by the year 2030 with its Identification for Development or ID4D initiative. What does the Bible say? And for this cause, God shall send them a strong delusion that they should believe a lie, that they might all be damned who believed not in the truth, but had pleasure in us for unrighteousness, which of course means fiction, all this stuff. And he causes all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and bond, to receive a mark in their right hand or in their foreheads. We're all familiar with this. That no man may buy, sell, or have benefits, as they say, services, right? Save that he had the mark or the name of the beast or the number of his name. 666 is a real simple concept. It just means Caesar. The word Caesar or Nero Caesar, and that just refers to a district. right? When you look up the word district, I did my last show on district, and it means seizure, distress, and distraint. Not a good thing. All right. What are the other quotes? Subsidized food shops in Delhi to have biometric authentication by next May. So you can't get food unless you have the mark, the ID, the artificial intelligence. All right. Singapore to begin collecting iris scans from citizens starting in 2017 for citizens and permanent residents. They'll be gathered when a citizen goes to re-register an identity card. Now, sooner or later, we're all going to have to make a choice. Do we want to go biometric and become part of the system that it's talking about and that it warns you against in the Bible, or are you going to deny the technology, the art, the artifice? You're going to have to make that choice, and it's coming real soon. You already have a chip in your cards. You're this close from carrying basically the mark is your – well, let me give an example, okay? What is this mark? We got something called vein recognition. Vein recognition or vascular biometrics refers to identity management solutions that authenticate based on the unique patterns made by a user's veins. See, right now, we hold an identity card. I have a driver's license. I have a bank card. I have all this. What happens when all you need to do is put your finger in a vein recognition, not a thumbprint, of vein recognition. In other words, it recognizes the blood flow in your veins. Said veins can be in the user's palm. Where's the mark? In their finger. Through this technology, you know, smartphones, all that stuff, physical access control, thanks to a special trait inherent in vein patterns. In other words, We're approaching the point where your natural substance is going to become the information that they use to identify you as a person. You will no longer need cash or a card or anything to identify yourself because all they need is your finger, right? So your natural makeup is what they're now gonna use if you allow it, if you volunteer to do this and keep the incremental, the incremental push to get you digitally registered in every way possible to the point where you can no longer, like I said, you have things in your body now that are machines owned by corporations, which essentially is government. A couple more quotes just to get the true notion of what this is. Now, the United Nations Sustainable Development 2030 target goal, 16.9, by 2030, quote, by 2030, provide legal identity for all, including birth registration, unquote. Legal identity for all, including birth registration. Guess what? The word legal means anti-God, anti-nature, anti-reality. Legal is fiction and fiction alone. It is adversary. So to provide adversary or satanic, if you will, identity for all, including birth registration. All going to have a person. We're all going to have a matrix. David Nabarro, special representative of the UN Security General of the United Nations, from a speech in 2016, he says, no community should be considered to be outside the span of this new agenda. Whatever your ethnicity, whatever your livelihood, whatever your lifestyle or location, all of you are inside the agenda. We need to inform everyone that these goals are the heart of a plan for the future of the world's people. No nations, no, the world's people, as well as for the planet itself. Peace and security, human rights and justice, and sustainable development brought together within this 2030 agenda. You want to know... You want to know what the hell's happening? World Bank says in its 2030 agenda report, identification for development says providing overviews to provide or providing legal identity for all, including birth registration by 2030, is a target shared by the international community as part of the Sustainable Development Goals, target 16.9. The World Bank Group has launched the Identification for Development ID4D cross practice initiative to help our client countries achieve this goal and with the vision of making everyone count. Ensure a unique legal identity and enable digital ID-based services to all. Now, I don't know what to tell you here.
nice spin
exactly
they use there.
Exactly what the Bible warns against.
Right.
You want to ignore that, do it, you know, do it while you're... Oh, my God. What the hell just happened? Did I lose you?
No, you're still there, but we're looking from some strange...
I'm so sorry, my computer just decided to fall on me. Wow. Wow, that was bizarre. My apologies.
No problem.
Great, I lost my mouse ball. The devil, it was the devil, I tell you. Well, I don't know what happened. How strange, my apologies.
That's all right. Well, you know, and good catch on the computer there, but, you know, it's hard for people to put their biases and judgments aside, you know, and it's, you know, I bet that everyone who attacks you like me, you know, which is always the case with every one of these attackers, is they haven't even read the Bible, much less your work, like they've never read or watched, you know, my work. You know, it's almost always the exact same arguments. But the irony is that every time they actually believe that their points are going to be original and that we haven't considered them, you know, and then they'll get after you for not taking their feedback on your work that they refuse to read, you know.
Well, and it's also, and I tell people all the time, look, if you're gonna disagree with me, you're really disagreeing with Noah Webster, whoever the authors of the Bible are. You're disagreeing with words that are not my own. I didn't make them up. Right, and it's important to know that you don't get to make them up either. Because
right.
When you're operating in someone else's property, they make the rules. When you rent a car, you follow their law, not your own. You don't go and say, well, hey, I'm going to rent your car. I'm going to pay you $2 instead of $35 a day, and I don't need insurance. Do you think you're going to get away with it? No, it's not your words to define, because this is a term. These are terms of art. These are things that we're passing on as they exist already. You can't say that I'm lying about something when I'm reading it directly from the frickin' Bible.
Yeah, Dwayne says, first things first, before you criticize something you don't know, you know, read it and read the trivium too. You know, it's like, it's so simple because, and I deal with this issue. It's such a common thing. I mean, it's like, oh my God. You know, just have the common sense to read something before you judge it. I have to say this every single day, you know, to somebody. Read it, look at it, study it, hear it, watch it before you judge it. And then you can actually have a valid opinion based on the actual content and not what you assume based on some red herring that you've created from prior knowledge, right? And placing it in front of me like I haven't considered your hyperbole.
Yeah, dude, it's not a you've uncovered so many people, but take H.G. Wells, right? Understudy of T.H. Huxley, right? Fabian Society member. Wrote a book called The New World Order in 1940, right? Proceeding from the Open Conspiracy in 1928, which he wrote, Blueprints for a World Revolution, right? You know, you look at these quotes and you realize this is what's happening. This is exactly what's happening. It's not only these guys that are warning against us, but it's actually, when I say the Bible warns against it, it's again that sort of notion of, hey, if you let this happen, then this will happen. If you follow this path, then this will happen to you. If you allow yourself to get illegal or to continue to operate in this legal identity, because you have so many benefits or wealth or whatever it is, all your investments, all the, you know, then this is what's going to happen. This is the inevitable course. They're telling you that it's going to a global society where every man will be registered. You have no rights to your children. You already abandoned your children. You've already put them into the same system. You've already destroyed them and your property to them. Right? You've already done all this. But if you continue knowing this information, especially knowing it instead of just being completely ignorant like most people, but if you know this information and yet you continue, well then what it's trying to tell you is that the natural law cannot protect you. You've given up all your rights. God, in other words, cannot protect you because you can't protect yourself anymore because you're operating not as yourself but as someone else, as another's property. Well, this was talked about in the Open Conspiracy in 1828. The political world of the Open Conspiracy must weaken, efface, incorporate, and supersede existing governments. The character of the Open Conspiracy will then be plainly displayed. Well, that's the United Nations right there. It will be a world religion, like it or not, guys. See, I don't think people understand is that the religion of government is your religion. You don't have a choice. You believe what government believes because you're operating in its person, in its status. You don't have a choice. It's part of the way the law is constructed. I'm not telling you to believe anything. I'm telling you government believes, right? This large, loose, assimilatory mass of groups and societies will definitely and obviously attempt to swallow up the entire population of the world and become a new human community. Remember, human means what belongs to man. It's not man. It's the form of man without substance, what belongs to man. The human anatomy is what belongs to man. The immediate task before all people, a planned world state, is appearing at 1,000 points of light. However, generations of propaganda and education may have to precede it. This is 1928. So we've just gone through generations of propaganda and education, and you're seeing now 1,000 points of light, as right. They call it, where they have their human society, human sophism.
You know, so this guy Jerry asks in the chat, is it truly prophecy or is it an execution plan? And I think, it's not predicting the future. It's looking at patterns. It's staying consistent. It's staying consistent with reality. It's understanding that there are no contradictions in nature, and following this all the way through, and just seeing the logic of, things play out. And when you're reading the Bible, someone, hundreds, thousands of years ago went, if this keeps continuing on with this adversary doing this stuff, these are the things that play out, and they write it down, and they write something else down, and it's just timeless knowledge that's based on these things.
Well, I like to think, because we don't know, I'm the first to say I don't know. When it comes to history, what has happened before us, civilizations, Atlantis, whatever, I don't know. And I'm never going to claim to know, because that's knowledge only. That's theosophical knowledge. That's man claiming to have godlike knowledge. I don't know. I never will know. No one will know, but a lot of people will claim to know.
Well, the point is that generally something has to happen in the past for someone to experience it and write it down.
Exactly.
So in other words, it probably happened before. If the Bible opens up with drugs and says, there's these drug things with the tree of knowledge and the tree of life, and we're going to put these swirling cherubim in front of it to warn you, because these drug things were probably used at some time in the past to create some situation of slavery, like the CIA is doing right now with MKUltra today. It's a reflection. And I've quoted Tim Leary and Aldous Huxley sitting there having yucking it up together about, the Bible, Timothy, doesn't the Bible begin with drug prohibitions? Oh, yes, indeed it does. Let's go sell drugs to the children. Yeah, that's a great idea, Aldous. Thank you. Oh, good job, Timothy. You'll be the sales boy. Here's a check from the CIA.
So proud of themselves, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so the notion is You know, it's one of those two things. Either, and I'm okay with either explanation, honestly. Either way, it follows logic, right?
If right.
To say that either it happened before and they're trying to warn us not to let this happen again, otherwise there will be a great flood as nature sort of reorganizes and said, okay, you're acting completely against nature and its harmony, therefore you're going to have cancers, you're going to have disease, you're going to have a zombie apocalypse, you're going to have whatever happens that wipes you out because you're not following the laws and the law of nature, how to treat each other, right? You're not taking care of each other, let alone your environment. Okay, that's fine. I'm also okay with the notion that the Bible and the legal law, which I know were both the ecclesiastical law, the canons, and the legal system were created when the Pope decided to separate church and state. He created the legals. He made this separate system so that he could that you could commit organized crime in the legal system and forgive it in the religious system, right? So the church and the state, they have to go together because they have to forgive the state for all its crimes, right? It's the only, you have to play God in order to forgive yourself, right? So you have to become the vicar, the replacement, or the Antichrist in order to forgive the whole system of legal stuff that you created in the first place, right?
It's outside of natural law.
There was a separation of church and state. It didn't happen with America. It happened with the Pope a long time ago. So, and I have all that documented in one of my blog posts as well. But the thing I'm trying to say is either it was a history or the whole thing was created at once, because there's no way that you could have created something that is opposed to another thing without having the opposite already there. You cannot have created the legal system without already having the Bible, or vice versa. I mean, to be opposed to each other in such a dramatic and obvious way, there has to be a connection between these two systems. Whether that is, as you say, the Bible being the word of God and a warning and all that, or...
Well, I didn't say it.
Yeah, as they say, I should say, they, whoever they is.
The prophesiers, the ones that say it's...
commenters. I have no problem either way, because either way, it explains the Bible and it explains the legal law. It explains that there is nature, and it explains that there are laws of nature, and it explains that there are things that are adversarial to the laws of nature. That's really all I need. I mean, I don't have that religious fervor that people have. This is why I'm so down on religion and all these, you know, I wish people could understand it, because I get accused of like Bible thumping and preaching, and I'm like, are you not listening to what I'm saying? I'm no one is more against religion over here, the fake religions out there, the denominations, which are all Roman. And even the Roman Catholic Church has come out openly and said, if you worship Sunday as the Sabbath day, then you're still under the Roman Church. You're not a Protestant or a Protestant. You're not protesting anything. You're still following our doctrine. We changed that a long time ago. We have the power. The Pope has the power to change the Bible, which means the Pope has the power to change the law, the natural law. Right? Because
well, he can't change the natural law, but he can order it so and pretend like
it is. That's what he is. He's a pretender, an antichrist, a vicar or replacement of God or Christ. That's what the king is. Right? They go through that whole ceremony. So I don't care, honestly, what the Bible's history is. All I'm trying to tell you, folks, is that the two cannot be understood with the twins. They cannot be understood without the other. If you're a professional lawyer, then you're probably farthest away from the Bible that you can be. If you're a preacher, you know, you're probably farthest away. And so you have no understanding because you have nothing to compare the light to. You don't understand the darkness.
Hopefully my system didn't crash here. Let me see what's going on. I guess we're still live. it was looking like. Anyway, I didn't want to go out on that far of a segue. I was just saying, logically speaking, you're either following it out through logic and saying these are the things that are going to happen, or and you're looking at natural law and staying consistent with reality, and you can just look at the patterns and things and foresee the likelihood, or it happened before and somebody wrote it down and said, hey, look, you dumbasses, if you do this again, you're going to be in this same spot again, and here's a book where we put it in.
Well, I just urge everybody out there, including myself, including you, anybody that is applying these tools like the Trivium and the scientific method, remember the difference between cold, formless information and knowledge. Where's your what is the source of your grammar? Because I got to tell you, the word adversaria is a Latin term that means most of the literature that's put forward to the public. Like anything you see in Barnes and Noble literally is going to be adversaria. It's going to, and most of it, is going to be,
except for the cookbooks and stuff.
Your basis for the Trivium and the scientific method must always start with that litmus test of, is it real or is it fiction? Okay. If it starts in fiction, it can never be anything but fiction. Therefore, you can never really come to a, how do I say?
You can't pull it into reality, but right, you can say, based on this story of fiction, here's the facts of the fictional story.
Yeah, so it has to start with that. And because you're talking about the law, right? You have to start with the foundational law, which is, of course, the highest, which is nature. Again, an act of God is something that man has no agency and no control over. That's why insurance doesn't cover it, right? So you have to start with that foundation before you can understand human agency being an agent or an attorney for that construct in the Matrix. Again, all the Matrix is just a really... They took something that could have actually enlightened people, and they turned it into a mystery. See, people don't like the Matrix movie because it actually explains anything to them, but because it presents them with a story-like mystery. It's like it doesn't really tell me what's going on, but it lets me know there is something else. Never actually enlightens me in any freaking way, but it actually turns me away from... even more so from the things that would actually enlighten me, right? It's like this, it pisses me off. And I feel like it's my mission to make sure that people know that the movie, The Matrix, is nothing but a plagiarization of some really incredible, incredible work that needs to be recognized. And, if you don't believe Keanu Reeves, go to The Matrix movie. Go to the part where he opens up the box, the hollowed out book, where he keeps his money and his discs, i.e. information, and you'll see that it's a hollowed out book called Simulacrum and Simulation. It's a prop in the frickin' movie. The only time homage is paid to the very source of most of the ideas in that movie. Otherwise, nothing. They don't give you any clue that would draw you to the light. Instead, the movie focuses on the pure darkness of it.
Hey, Clint, after we just had that entire conversation explaining all of this, you'll never guess. Someone, the scrutinizer, just posted in there, the Bible is fictional and man-made, though, isn't it?
Well, okay.
It's like we just you don't even bother. We just had like a 40-minute discussion on it.
But everything that's man-made is. Don't you understand?
Right. We just covered it for an hour and a half. It's like, oh my God, it's
your litmus test that anything man-made is, does it respect nature and reality? Does it flow? Is it in harmony with nature and reality? That's it. Anything man-made must be in harmony with the laws of nature, or it's bad. That's all it is. I don't know how else to put this,
It's like, oh my God, we're discussing the Bible. We have to Shut up!
Well, but see, I find that amazing. I find that to be the most intricate, beautifully done conditioning, the brainwashing that it took to take people from what it was, where it used to be illegal to even... You made a comment like anything like you're getting about Jesus Christ, about the Bible, you were thrown in jail because you were actually disparaging the foundation of law. But now, because we've lost the law, because it's been taken away from us in so many aspects, we are now free and open to completely disparage the law by disparaging the story it's told in. And I can't tell you how important that is to these people, because if you don't know the foundation of the law you're under, that you're giving fealty to, you can never escape. You're a slave for life. And this is why people like Horace Greeley, who was in the Civil War time the editor of the New York Post or whatever, he said a Bible-reading people cannot be enslaved. Compare that to what we have today.
Where you know, I have come to this same damn conclusion so many times, even without going through the study of it like you have, you know, and just going through it through the point of MKUltra and all of these cults that the CIA, et cetera, creates, because they're trying to get people away from it to enslave them, and they're always attacking it to enslave them. We're not saying to follow, you know, we're not saying to become good Christians. We're saying to read the Bible, to understand it, because if you're studying it and understanding it, you can't be enslaved, because it explains everything in there. That's
all.
Well,
let me be clear. Just, you know, just the trivium is in the freaking Bible. I mean, it's right there. They call it by different words. They call logic a dialectic.
Yeah, but it is in there.
It's in the Bible. I mean, you can't deny that, right? Your source of this thing, which you are so supportive of, and which I am very supportive of, is in the Bible. Most of the stuff that we say, even when it's against the Bible, is in the Bible. Like, quoting the Bible, you don't even know it because you've never read it.
You know, and as you read it, you go through and you know, you constantly have these epiphanies. Oh, I've heard that said 1,000 times. Oh, I've heard that said 1,000. Oh, that's where that came from. Oh, that's where that came from. Over and over and over.
It's truly an uplifting experience. Not bad in any way, because, again, you start to realize you've been a fool. And that's the greatest feeling, because you're overcoming that.
See, now these people are all confusing it. They're not getting the point. You know, this wise law. Oh, this is getting silly. And hail Christ the King, Avenue King, Christus Rex. They're not getting the point. You know, and this is, you know, I guess.
I get very, very positive comments from your listeners, which tells me that those who are actually listening.
Well, I should correct this, because I'm only reading the negative ones, because the 90 some people in the chat box who get it, you know, the squeaky wheel gets the grease, right?
I don't know how you could possibly listen and comment at the same time. I mean, that doesn't make sense to me. It's why I never, doing a show, I'll very seldom pull up the chat room, because it's distracting. I mean, you're actually putting forward a thought while someone else is trying to put one into you, right? Doesn't really make sense. So,
well, it's okay for the guest, but, you know, what I like to do is, you know, see if the audience is getting it and, you know, following along.
But you've got so many, trolls.
So, this is the scrutinizer. It's probably Atwill or somebody trolling, you know, because... I bet, you know, and I think you wanted to say something to that, too, but I've been seeing... this sort of behavior, I wouldn't be surprised at all. So I'm blocking this clown.
I will just say this, that inquiring minds want to know about the situation between you and Joe Atwill, what you discovered about him that made you sort of separate, or him separate, or whatever. I think a lot of people are curious about that, and I respect the fact that you're not just whatever, either praising or bashing or just coming out with some, right, that you're actually not just, you know, doing what these people in the comment section do. That if you're going to come out with something, you know, when I do a piece on anyone, when I, you know, take the Tragedy and Hope guy, here's the case. This is the court case. This is
what it's, you know, and for those who don't know, Clint and I did a article. Clint did the final edit and posted it. There was actually three of us that worked on it, exposing the whole situation, you know, with the litigious
whistleblower.
the whistleblower over it. A certain, you know, in our opinion, in the judge's opinion,
defining our own terms, whistleblower.
Yeah, whistleblower by the name of, you know, I mean, it was already out, but the paper is called.
But the point I want to make is that I offer open, I offer the same thing to James Corbett for his blatant errors about the Federal Reserve in his document. I offer people the ability to rebut anything I say because, you know, anything I say is generally a sourced thing. It's not me saying it, right? So, you know, I think that you are in a position where you can offer some, maybe some sourced documentation like we did in that case. And, you know, I've always been a very, very, to say suspect of at will would be an understatement because, you know, here's a guy using fictional characters in history to disprove other fictional characters in history. And I'm like, right? Come on, man. It's either all fiction or, you know.
Well, and the whole thing could be contemporaneous, too, you know. But this is why you would never come on the show. You know, people would always ask, how come Clint doesn't come on the show? You know, and there was a, you know, there was an issue there, and you didn't want to be a part, really. And, we, you know, you and I butted heads, and I believed, you know, someone else's integrity was fine for a while. And then, you know, as we got into chronology and as, you know, Jacob Dueleman started breaking things apart and then we're looking at things through the eyes of natural law and all of this, it becomes apparent that that's a farce. And then you, you know, you go through and there's like at least three other people that came up with the same idea before, you know, and, you know, I'd have to dig it up in the database somewhere, but, you know, it's like it's not an original theory even. You know, the typology aspect is per se, but there's no evidence that it's not contemporary. And, you know, it's like two scribes sitting in the room next to each other going, hey, we're faking history anyway, you know.
Well, my concern, my main concern is that so many of your past acquaintances, friends, or who you thought were legitimate consorts, if you will, bringing forth information turned out to be plants or whatever, you know, and so many times you've written about them, you've pointed that they all source themselves instead of anything real, right? And you know, my concern is that you're doing the same thing with Joe, and I was my main concern with you was that, and I'm sort of, you know, at this point
you can say I told you so.
No, I don't want to say that because I don't know. I'm you know, this is why I can certainly criticize his work in many, many ways, but I'm not going to sit here and you know, I might bring up the fact that he went to a Jesuit school and the leader of the Jesuits.
Well, it was St. Mary's Catholic School. I'm not even sure how that's per se a Jesuit school. You know?
I read it was a Jesuit school, and you know.
Well, I mean, in his own bio, it says it's a Jesuit school, but then you go up and you look at it online, and it just says St. Mary's Catholic School. So I'm
The Jesuits. The idea of the Jesuits is that it's they do everything on behalf of the church. But they're the controlled opposition, so they do everything that is opposed to the church in favor of the church. It's a really bizarre concept. And Loyola said, give me a child till he's, what, 10 or 7 or something, and I'll give you a Jesuit. Right?
Yeah, St. Mary's International School is an international school for boys located in Setagaya, ward of Tokyo, Japan. Primary language is in English. Brothers of Christian Instruction and founded in 1954, St. Francis Xavier District. I guess Javier was a Jesuit, right? St. Francis Javier. So maybe that is Jesuit worshiping, but...
Well, again, I haven't done enough... I'm going to just be clear. I haven't done enough looking into it because I could debunk most of the things he says as either unproven history or fictional characters that, you know, you can't use fictional characters to prove or disprove. You know, there's no self-evidence in what he's saying. There's nothing that you can say is of reality or provable. So, you know, he doesn't pass the litmus test on my end, is what I'm saying. But again, I don't want to be accused of ad hominem or anything like that.
Right. Neither do I. And this is just our opinions of his work, our personal opinions. That's it, you know.
Well, the thing, you know, you told me a couple of things offline that I won't repeat, but some of the things he's been involved with have certainly raised some eyebrows. And I'll leave that to you if you want to, you know, actually talk about that.
Yeah.
I would prefer that you do what we did with some of these other guys and write it up, you know,
right.
Write it up as a research paper, because, you know, honestly, Jan, I like your radio shows, but that's what you're good at. You are good at writing up the research papers and documenting them. And that'll do more good than anything we can possibly speculate upon just in this type of atmosphere, you know. That's what I'm all about.
And then somebody's got to jump in as quick as they can and try to co-opt it and spin it to their own agenda after we've unspun it, wash and repeat over and over. But,
my favorite part about Grove was the fact that he had taken and it was on his resume that I found that he was versed in spin selling.
Yeah,
a specific type of selling things with spin, like the media does, right? I was like, oh, isn't that interesting?
Yeah. So anyway, what can you want to do a fourth installment of Sunday School sometime in the next few weeks?
Dude, I'm always available for you if you need a guest. You know, you've got the entire Bible and the entire legal dictionary to talk about. So you could do this the rest of your life and not get through it. So totally up to you. If you need a guest, I'd be happy to.
Well, I didn't want to make it about that. I wanted to make it about, you know, topics and trying to get this stuff across to the public. But, you know, maybe one of these days we ought to have you and Bill Jocelyn on together. That would be a great show.
Yeah. This is no longer, for me, this is about, I see what's happening, man. People need to know this. It's not a matter of, hey, I got a book I want to sell, or, you know, this is the ancient knowledge. The great mystery, the greatest mystery of all, is that there is no mystery. All the mysteries of the secret societies, or the societies of the secret, a society built on their own secrets, right? Again, it's all fiction. There is no secret in nature. Nothing is hidden in nature. And the most beautiful knowledge you can have is that there are some things that are supposed to remain hidden, that are again, God, the knowledge of God, if you will, the things that man isn't supposed to know. And that's one of the most spiritual knowledges there are, is to say, I don't know, and I'm not supposed to know. Even the maxim of law says, I am not supposed to know what causes life, what causes creation out of nothing. That's something I'm not supposed to know.
Bill Jocelyn is in the audience. He says, woof, that's a response in sheepdog, and will do.
Nice. Yeah, he's an interesting character, and I liked you last show.
Oh, man, there's so much to discuss. But, yeah, you know, I definitely want to do that. And, you know, we need to get to the core of some more of this stuff. There's always some more, but it's just getting people to, you know, read, study things first, look at them, begin to understand them, break them apart from every possible direction.
I'm going to put this out again, that we need to... We need to organize a conference, right? The anti-truth movement conference, or the anti-Passio movement or something, the anti-free your mind conference, right? An actual sourced research conference where we're actually presenting fact-based, source-based information.
So it'd be like you and me and Bill and...
the list would be very small.
It would be a very... And maybe Matt and, you know, and Jacob. I mean, yeah, that's a real short list there.
I'm telling you, yeah. It's not like you have Alex Jones emceeing it.
All right. Well, we're almost at 2 hours, man. I mean, good show. Thank you so much for coming on, Clint. I appreciate it. You know, ladies and gentlemen, thanks for supporting and donating. Lexvin, a couple others in the audience donated during the show. Please click the donate button. Please go to the website, GnosticMedia.com. Support the show. Clint Richardson's websites.
Sorry again about the unplanned wardrobe malfunction, my computer falling.
Oh, no worries on that. We all forgot about that till you mentioned it again.
Yeah.
And what was your other, what's your straw man info?
Strawmanstory.info, and that's where you can download the book for free.
And make a donation to Clint for all his hard work and research and writing, and since he's given his book out for free. And anyway, that's a wrap, ladies and gentlemen. Good night, Clint. We'll see you next week. I think Bill Jocelyn was back next week. Maybe we'll have you two on together then. I'm not sure. I know he and I have a lot to cover independently still, but we'll get that plan and some other people on that same topic. See you next time.
Take care.